Hey, scaredy cats. Welcome to the Haunted Library. This month's installment is all about Gloria by Bentley Little. I'm Sherry.
And I'm Ryan.
And we're going to break down this absolutely bonkers book, well, as best we can, I think.
We're going to try. Is this our first non-Stephen King book?
Yes, it is.
I feel like we should get some sort of prize.
I'm sure. Well, we've already talked about him in the first, like, not even, we didn't even make it a minute without bringing up Stephen King.
So. Your listeners have a drinking game going where every time I'm on, they have to take a drink every time I bring up Stephen King, and we made it 30 seconds into the recording.
You are welcome, listeners.
Drink.
So the book description, considering she had just attended her mother's funeral, Gloria James never expected to see the woman again, but then her dead mom shows up at her house. Gloria's mom is different. She's younger than when she died, dressed in clothes from the 1980s, and nobody else in Gloria's family seems to recognize her. As Gloria tries to figure out the reason for her mother's reappearance and the odd behaviors the woman begins to exhibit, other bizarre events occur. The changes to Gloria's world are small and subtle at first, then they become much more startling. The freaky situation might just be connected to a mysterious shed in a small California town. The strangers who gather around the shed seem to know Gloria's name, and maybe they aren't strangers after all. Do you think that Bentley Little considered calling this the shed?
I wouldn't be surprised, or the woman. I was really surprised that it wasn't called that. As soon as Gloria was announced, I was like, okay, that's different.
Yeah.
Maybe we should rewind a bit and talk about Bentley Little for people who might not know who he is, because everyone knows who Steph King is, drink.
That is true. That's true. Yeah. Do you want to talk a little bit? I think you know a little more about Bentley Little than I do. You've read more than of his books than I have, for sure.
Yeah, and the thing is, I feel like it's hard to know Bentley Little because he is, unlike other authors we won't name, he doesn't really hold the spotlight very well intentionally. He avoids doing a lot of interviews. There's no real adaptations of his work, except there might one of his short stories, I think, was adapted for some short-lived anthology series, I think, but... Mm-hmm. He doesn't really want to be in the public eye. So his books, when you first find out about Bentley Little, like when I did a few years ago, it was kind of weird because I looked him up and I was like, oh my gosh, he's been publishing all these horror books like pretty much consistently, an average of one a year, I think, since the 90s.
Yeah, 1990, so, I think, was the first one, was the revelation.
Oh yeah, so it's kind of interesting when you stumble across him and find out about this whole world that he's created, because he's pretty much he is to Arizona what Stephen King is to Maine. A lot of his stories are set kind of like around the same area, and he kind of has this, I would almost say, like his own world. Not necessarily that all the stories take place in the same universe, quote unquote, but they all kind of have the same vibe. And like we were talking about earlier, almost all of it, not all, but almost all of his books have very simplistic titles. The House, The Haunted, The Bank,
The Resort,
The Resort, The Consultant, The Revelation, all things like that. You know, even his short story collection is called The Collection. he's had a couple outliers, but and Gloria would be one of them.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what your first Bentley Little novel was?
I do. I remember. I don't think anyone forgets their first Bentley Little because he's so fucking crazy. it was The Academy, and I picked it up just from a used bookstore, and it's... So I think the thing we should also talk about with Bentley Little is that he tends to have the same formula, and I don't want that to put anyone off, because I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, although it can get repetitive, but his books really do have a formula that he kind of sticks with. So The Academy is about this principal who comes to this school, and she's she's the new principal. And it basically turns into this cult-like scenario where she has some people who are loyal to her, and she is evil, almost supernaturally so. Mm-hmm. And all these weird things keep happening. And it's a theme that shows up in almost all of his books. Like, the store evil corporation comes to this town and kind of takes it over. His books are often very satirical. Like, The Consultant is... it's this evil consultant that takes over this office. And it sounds ridiculous, but they're really fun. But they do all kind of have the same rhythm and flow. Which ones have you read again?
So the funny thing is, I just realized, because I was going back through the list of his bibliography, and I've actually only read The Haunted. I could have sworn I'd read another book by him. But then when I looked at my library, because I know it's a book that I have that I'm thinking of, couldn't find it. And also then just going through kind of the names of the books, as well as some plot synopses, I guess. None of them sounded familiar. So I think the only one that I've read is The Haunted.
That's interesting, because I looked up his books as well before we did this, and I counted 8 of his books that I read, and I was like, oh, I would have thought it was way more than that, but
really,
it was just 8. Yeah. And you know, that's the thing about his formula. He does this one thing pretty well. Like, I wouldn't say any of his books are masterpieces, but they're always fun and insane. Mm-hmm. And I think somebody said, with Bentley Little, you always know what you're getting into, yet at the same time, you have no idea.
Because
he has a lot of tricks up his sleeve.
Now, in The Haunted, there's a lot of weird sex stuff that happens. And not to yuck anybody's yum if you're into masturbating with a Barbie. But
spoiler.
I'll cut that out.
No.
Don't.
It's a teaser.
It's a teaser. Are most of his books like that?
Yes. Yes, I'm glad you brought that up, because it's interesting with Bentley Little, because he does, I think one of the things that he does a lot in his books is specifically, I'm trying to think of the right words for this, evoking crossing a taboo, I guess would be a good way to put it.
Yep.
And a weird sexual perversion is added to a lot of his stories. And it's I can't fault him for that. I'm not going to say I like it, because I don't, but mm-hmm. Bentley Little never treats the weird sexual aspects of the book as a thing that he likes. He's not overly sexualizing his characters, but weird sexual perversions will happen, usually instigated by the antagonist of the book.
Right.
And it's, it's meant to evoke horror and disgust, and it does.
Absolutely. Yeah. In The Haunted, I know that the things that happen are awful. And it makes you uncomfortable, and it makes you realize something very wrong is happening.
Yeah. And I can see it's a very tricky and fine line to walk, because I can see some people reading the books and they come across a scene like that and they're like, oh my God, I'm going to post this on the Men Writing Women Reddit, because it's so ridiculous and over the top. But I think Bentley Little knows that, and he wants you to be disgusted when you read that. He doesn't want you to be enticed. He wants it to make us feel gross, and we're not supposed to be reading it. And right. I think he usually achieves that. But yeah, a lot of his books do have that kind of element thrown in. I remember there was a scene in The Consultant where one of the workers goes into a meeting, and they're like, oh my God, we have so many meetings now, it's insane, it should just be an email. And she walks into the meeting, and it's everyone in the room is naked, and The Consultant is like, take your clothes off now. And she's like, no, I'm going to HR. But then it's this weird thing where all the people that work there are also naked, and they're they're just acting as if it's a normal day.
So, and this book, very different from everything that I've read about Bentley Little.
I was going to say, and everything I just said, throw it out the window, because Gloria is so different.
So if you had to describe Gloria in one sentence, what do you think, how do you think you would describe it?
Oh, good question. I'd probably say Gloria is a extremely confusing, messed up book that is also, that also manages to be really like surprisingly heartfelt, especially for Bentley Little.
The confusing part, I agree with, well, I agree with all of it, but I remember like how many times did I text you when we were, when I was reading this, because you read it before I did. And I was like, what is going on? I don't understand.
Yeah, I was, and at first I didn't know if I was going to really be on board with the book because I was just so bewildered.
My favorite description that I read, I saw somebody on Goodreads reviewing it said, it was like reading a Bentley Little novel while watching a David Lynch film. And I was like,
yeah, I guess that works. I can see that for sure. And, you know, that's funny too, because the overall plot ends up being about this weird sort of multiverse. And I was thinking, like, while I was reading, I just wonder how much inspiration Bentley Little maybe drew from this kind of new wave of like horror in our pop culture of the last few years, like Hereditary, Mother, the Darren Aronofsky movie, and even this new one that just came out, Men, like they all kind of have that same flavor.
Right.
Because essentially, your plot synopsis, basically just said very bizarre events follow, and that's pretty much all you can say, because there will be these moments where just like in the middle of the story, Gloria will be talking about her two kids, and then her husband's like, wait, we don't have kids, what are you talking about? And then her life just changes around her, and she's like, oh yeah, I'm not a nurse, I teach, and this is our home, and we have all these friends come over because we never had kids. And it just kind of like, she's hopping from one alternate universe of her life, like an alternate timeline. She's just kind of like hopping throughout all these scenarios that kind of speak to like, oh, what if I had just done this thing a little bit differently when I was younger, how different would my life be?
Yeah. And I mean, it's, I think that the through line through the whole book is just this love that she has for her husband Benjamin, even though it's not perfect. Like there are times when she is like, he drives me crazy, like, and he's not who I thought he was gonna be. I remember the one part, and I think it's in part one, she's talking about the first time she saw him, and he was in a doctor's office, and she thought he was like a musician, she thought he was a pianist, because he was doing these like hand exercises, these finger exercises. And so she thought it was him kind of practicing something like in his head, and like pretending to play the piano, when it turns out he was just doing like carpal tunnel syndrome exercises to help alleviate that. And so she's like, so here I thought he was this big artistic person and he was going to be this imaginative guy. And he's just very methodical and plodding, and he is not very imaginative. So she's got, it's I think very realistic about relationships, and she still has this incredible love for him as we see throughout the book. And then, so that love kind of plays out, like that's really, it's love, loss, and how she handles grief.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so essentially the bulk of this novel is we, the reader, are so confused for so long because we will live out this scene. And the book opens much like the description, where Gloria's mom dies and they have the funeral, and then Gloria's mother knocks on the door. And so you kind of get into the story and being like, oh my God, is she evil? Is that really her mom, or is it something else? And then just, you know, a third of the way through, less than that, it just takes a hard right turn. Mm-hmm. And Gloria wakes back up and it's like, oh, my mom never died. And it's my husband that died. And so I have to live this life where my husband has died. But then some other guy that I used to date back in the day, I've been having lunch with him again. And suddenly I see his old obituary on the internet and he's been dead. So you're just kind of like confused for a long time, but these scary, interesting things keep happening and it mm-hmm. speeds up. So we eventually learn quite a bit, quite quickly, where Gloria keeps jumping through these timelines. She has this unique ability to jump through all these different scenarios of her life. And her ultimate goal in every single one is to prevent these people who do the same thing, who are disguising themselves as her dead relatives for whatever reason. She has to save the love of her life, Benjamin, and all these timelines and figure out a way to keep him alive. Mm-hmm. So that's what we mean when we say it's batshit, but at the same time, kind of sweet.
Yeah. So, I mean, we won't give away too many spoilers. Well, I guess we kind of have given away like the big spoiler, but that's okay. We won't get into too much with the plot because it's very repetitive, right?
It happens
over and over and over again. But like you said, it starts off immediately with this puzzle. Like her mom shows up. She's years younger than she was when she died. No one recognizes her. Like her sister doesn't recognize her. Gloria's husband, Benjamin, doesn't recognize her. The grandchildren, nobody. Like Maxine, her best friend, who lives across the street, doesn't recognize her. The only person that does is Gloria.
Mm-hmm. So I was going to ask, you know, since we're not going to go too deep into the plot step by step or anything, but mm-hmm. did you have any like favorite or standout moments?
Hmm. The scene with Maxine. So Maxine is Nora is Gloria's mom's name. The scene with Maxine being like, she called me a meddling cunt.
The neighbor, yeah.
Because Maxine doesn't recognize her. She doesn't know who she is. And Nora, who seems to be on the surface very, very much like Gloria's mom. I mean, she is Gloria's mom, but she, for the most part, acts like her and has similar mannerisms. We learn that, you know, she's not quite the same. And isn't there a part where she, like, defecates on Maxine's sidewalk?
Yes, I think we hear about it after the fact, but yeah.
So just that kind of like this, she starts out seeming like she's there to help and that she doesn't really know what's going on. And she kind of inserts herself back into Gloria's life. She takes care of the kids. She's cooking and cleaning for Benjamin, which allows Benjamin and Gloria to kind of reconnect. I liked the reveal that, you know what, not all is as it should be. Well, which, you know, when your dead mom shows up after her funeral yeah. and she's 20 years younger, that's probably a sign too. Or 40 yeah. years younger, it's not even 20 years.
There were a lot of parts that, surprisingly, considering like just how off the wall this story is, there's a lot of like pretty good scary parts that mm-hmm. I remember. So there's one where they wake up in the middle of the night and hear like someone has broken in and they
terrifying. Hear voices.
And then, you know, it's this really long tense scene where they're calling the cops and like looking for weapons. Like, okay, what do we do if they come in here? They're trying to get in. And then you realize that it's like these weird other versions of her, like her parents, right? Mm-hmm. Her Benjamin's parents. So there's a lot of really good scenes like that. And there's like these spooky chase scenes. There's a section of the book where
at the party,
yeah,
the barbecue,
all their friends, it's almost just like they break the fourth wall and they just suddenly kind of turn on their friends. And it's really, there's a lot of tense scenes, and I bring that up specifically because Bentley Little, I know he's always kind of rejected these other labels, like, you know, a thriller yeah. or dark drama or dark comedy. He kind of rejects all that and he just wants his novels to be just called horror novels.
He fully embraces that's what he writes. And and I think I read I found two interviews with him and that was it. After scouring the internet trying to find interviews, And they were with, they weren't, you know, with like huge publications. They were with small websites. And he talked about how he actually really hates when writers do that. When he said, you know, when horror became unfashionable for a while.
Yeah.
He saw a lot of his peers kind of be like, oh no, we write suspense. We write thrillers. And he was like, come on. No, you write horror novels. Like don't take the cowardly way out and try and like sell your stuff as something that it's not. And he just kind of stays true to, I am a horror writer.
And that still lingers today because that's honestly one of my biggest pet peeves is like when you're on Twitter or a Facebook group or something and you post about a horror movie that you really liked, there's always going to be one comment that says, oh, I thought that was more of a thriller, or like, oh, I thought that was kind of like a drama. Mm-hmm. Or when people say like, oh yeah, Hereditary is a really good drama, but then at this scene, it turns into horror. And it's like, no, it's horror, you know,
yeah.
It can just, it has a little more substance to it. Yeah, that kind of sent me on a tangent there, but I like Bentley Little for that. And, you know, I was surprised because he is so kind of like closed and doesn't say much, but his short story collection, he actually has like little personal notes before each story about like where he got the idea or whatever. And I was surprised he did that, but they're kind of interesting to read. I learned that he was really good friends with the creator of SpongeBob.
Really?
Yeah, they went to college together.
Well, that's not a pairing, I would imagine.
Right.
But I love that. So what else stood out for you? Like anything else that you talked about, the barbecue, that scene at night where they were like hunting for weapons and trying to get the police. Anything else that, I just thought of one.
Oh yeah, go ahead, please.
There's a scene with one of the neighbor's pets.
Yes.
That's all I'm going to say. That is absolutely horrific and so well done. But as an animal lover, I was appalled and shocked, but it makes its point.
Yeah, it's a really tense scene too, because I think like the night before she just has this moment where she realizes that her mother is not her mother. She is this evil being, and she sees her mother just like close her bedroom door like normal, act like she's going to bed, and then just kind of crawl through the window like an animal and slink off into the night. So that was like it was a really good setup and reveal. That was a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't really have any more specific scenes that come to mind, but I did just kind of want to go back to, because I feel like we should really champion Bentley Little for this, just how like sad and melancholy and emotional this book was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because like I said earlier, a lot of his novels are satirical and there's maybe a little bit of black humor in there where just like the absurdity of these crazy situations are just a little over the top. And, you know, he's having a lot of fun, but he just seemed so introspective with this one, I think. And just in the melancholy way, I was kind of like, as I was reading, thinking like, where was his headspace when he wrote this? Is he thinking about, you know, just like getting older and not wanting to be forgotten when you're gone?
Yeah, because that's definitely a big part of it, right? Like her mother, we just keep referring to her as her mother, but she constantly tells Gloria, you're not going to remember him. You're going to forget. You're going to forget Benjamin. And early in the novel, as she goes through each loop, she does kind of forget. Like you don't get that callback to, oh, I remember when this happened. It's not until probably, I can't say exactly, but it's later in the novel when she starts remembering, no, I remember vaguely these other details. And so she starts to remember, but at the beginning, you don't get that. You don't get that same remembrance. And I think that's the big thing when her mother's threatening her, saying that you'll forget him. Like it's heartbreaking.
Yeah, totally. I did write a review of this book for my website, but I don't think I've even put it up yet. And I was just kind of scrolling through those notes. And I said, this is what I said after I first finished reading it. I got the sense more and more that Little Bentley Little was kind of just tapping into this whole idea, this disquieting idea that the things we love tend to destroy themselves over time. And, you know, we don't really get like a supernatural businessman posing as some, you know, like cult leader to come in and mess things up. She just wakes up one day and realizes that, like, you know, as she's shifting through these timelines, she's also saying, like, things have been changing for so long and you don't notice they're changing because time moves so slow. But, like, let's, we have this method where she's like, essentially zooming really fast to see how all these little tiny things lead up to this tragedy every time that she has to figure out how to prevent.
And she tries so hard. I think that's what's so heartbreaking. Like, she tries so hard every time and she can't save him no matter how much effort she puts into it. And even, I'm trying not to spoil things here. I'm going to just stop what I'm going to say. But and it's interesting because so at the probably about, I want to say almost at the very end, you learn that the beginning of the novel wasn't the beginning of the loops because she remembers how he died the first time and it wasn't the way he died in the first part of the book. So you like you're coming into the story, like at some point the story has already been in motion. And I love that because it just kind of lends to that idea that this just keeps happening over and over and over again, because the book is obviously a finite piece of work, but in this case, it's not like it's going to go, it went on before the book and it's going to go on after the book.
Yes. And yeah, I really like that. And oh shit. I almost spoiled the Dark Tower in a big way. Cause I was going to be like, well, the end of the Dark Tower, when this and this happens, and I was like, what are you doing? But I will spoil Futurama. Do you remember how Futurama ended? That really nice ending?
You're not going to spoil it. I haven't seen it in a long time, so you can go ahead and...
Well, yeah, it's been so long now. I'm just going to spoil it. But the last episode of Futurama is very sweet, and it reminded me of this book a lot because Leela and Fry, who have been... They've been so off and on throughout the whole series. There's this, like, glitch that happens where... because of the professor's invention going wrong or something, everyone on Earth is like frozen in time except for them.
Yes, so I remember that.
They live this whole life where they just travel the world and it's just them and they're so happy together and they have the best life. And then when they're really, really old, they're having, you know, dinner where they first got together or something and they're so happy being just them. And then the professor comes back out of this wormhole and he's like, okay, I fixed it. But if you go back in time with me, you're not going to remember this life. And, you know, we'll resume the other timeline. So they have to make the choice. Like, we're not going to remember this entire life that we led together, but we're going to choose to do it all over again. And that reminded me a lot of Gloria. Just because he's being so like, sentimental and just talking about like the smallest choices can have the biggest impact on our lives. And, you know, like we don't plan to go, you know, for a walk and then get hit by a car and get killed. Or we don't plan for, you know, our loved ones to die in car accidents or whatever. But he just seems to kind of be like harping on this regret and all these lives that we could have lived if X, Y, or Z didn't happen. It's just really sweet that way.
Yeah. So actually I picked out a few quotes that I really liked and
me too.
Three out of the four of them have to do with that idea of grief and like just that emptiness. And like, so one of them is a feeling of emptiness pierced her heart. It happened to her at least once a week, stumbling across remnants of her old life, artifacts that Benjamin had left behind and she'd not thought to donate or discard. And every time those discoveries were a shock. She was instantly filled with sadness, a feeling of loss so acute and unbearable that if it were not for the fact that she was responsible for two boys, she did not know what she might have done.
Wow. I'm glad we chose different quotes. So the one I picked says something, I screenshotted in the middle of the sentence, something, something life, the small everyday experiences, ended up being the things that were the most important. It was drinking coffee with Benjamin in the morning, disagreeing about whether to watch a cooking show or a basketball game, and compromising on a movie, reading aloud to each other interesting articles in the newspaper. It was looking at his profile when he was driving in the car and she was sitting next to him, or shopping together for groceries. All of these unremarkable occurrences made up their lives, and while individually they might seem trivial or inconsequential, there was absolutely nothing more meaningful or significant to her. Mm. And that just kind of sums up the whole book for me.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's so heartbreaking. Like, it really, like, it's just, like I said, the idea that their love is not perfect. It's not this fairy tale romance. It's very real. It is very, I don't know what's the word I'm looking for. It's very real, right? And I think the idea that just because you don't have this fairy tale romance, and just because sometimes you're like, you're not quite the person that I thought you were going to be when I met you, doesn't mean that losing that person isn't going to be so traumatic and alters your universe. Like, literally in this case, it alters her universe when he dies.
Yeah.
We never hear about Gloria dying. It's only about Benjamin and his death. And even like in some of the other, the time loops that she's in, or whatever you want to call it, she loses her children.
Yeah.
And that's not as traumatic to her as losing her husband.
You know, I kind of liked that about this book, because, you know, there's nothing like the bond between mother and child. Yeah, we get it. Like, we know. I'm not saying that that's not true, but I'm just saying I like it when that bond isn't kind of utilized as a crutch in these situations, because I just feel like we've had so many stories where Mama Bear will do anything to save her kids. I feel like I should have an example ready to pull out, but I don't. But I just kind of like that it was this chosen love, because I feel like a lot of people can relate to, you know, having their chosen family. And so, yeah, I really like that it ended up being about Benjamin. I remember when I realized that, I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. It's not like she, you know, loses her kids or and something and uses all her like mama power to bring them back.
Mm-hmm. And I think in part one, you don't necessarily get that that's where the story is going to go.
No, not at all. It's kind of a surprise.
One other quote that I wanted to share was that this is, there seemed a very real possibility that she might lose him, and the knowledge hit her like a punch to the stomach. It suddenly seemed harder to breathe, and the thought of living a life without him filled her with a looming despair. Gloria knew she had lost him before, and while she didn't actually remember it, his death had started her on this journey. She'd been so unable to live with his absence that she had gone after him in the same way she had gone after strangers, even as a part of her had known that such an effort was dangerous.
I just kind of thought of like an interesting theory. It might be a little ridiculous to buy, but hear me out. So, and you know, this isn't a secret. Bentley Little, he has his formula and he has a certain like story that he likes to tell. But all of his characters throughout all of his books, they're really similar. Like, they're pretty much the same people. They're interchangeable. Which isn't necessarily a bad thing, because it's like they kind of represent just a traditional American family. You know, there's almost always a husband and a wife. Usually they have two kids, a boy and a girl. Mm-hmm. Just like with The Haunted, there's, you know, families like that. And The Academy, The Store. Yeah, it's really prevalent. So I was kind of, you know, when we started the book with this same family setup, the two kids and, you know, dad works from home as a programmer or something, and mom usually works in an office or something like that. And I kind of got the sense while I was reading that it's like, oh, this is one of Bentley Little's like stock characters. Mm-hmm. It's almost as if they're becoming like self-aware in a weird way, or it's like they're almost breaking the fourth wall by being like, we're your generic Bentley Little characters, but this is us like realizing that we have lives. So that was, was kind of cool in that way as well.
Speaking of theories, we learned that Gloria and her mother can bring people back from the dead. Like that's stated, yeah. It's not part one. It's later on when Gloria becomes a little more aware of the things that she's doing to get Benjamin, to save Benjamin, basically. What do you think they are? Do you have a theory?
like, what kind of being are they?
I don't know. Maybe. Well, I mean, at one point I think her mother says something about, this is why once we were gods, we were considered gods.
Here's my theory. And I don't know. I don't think this was mentioned in the book at all, but are humans, we live in three dimensions. Okay. Wait. There's the gummy. It's kicking in. I'm trying to say that maybe these people are fifth dimensional beings and that they don't see time in the same way we, three dimensional, four dimensional. Oh. What are we? I don't know. The same way we do.
Interesting. So they can just travel through dimensions and time with ease.
Yeah, because they perceive and
in five dimensions.
Kind of my theory. But knowing Bentley Little, I'm sure they're just like demons.
Maybe. But it's interesting because Nora, Gloria's mom, is much more self-aware. Like, she knows what she's doing all along. And all of the people that are targeting Benjamin seem to know what they're doing. Whereas Gloria, even though she's clearly the same type of being as Nora, whatever that being is, she doesn't have that same self-awareness. Like, she pieces it together.
Yeah.
So I wonder, is it that she got stuck? Now I'm just like, I'm caught in a theory that I can't get out of. Is she just stuck in this? She's so fixated on this love that she's forgetting who she is?
I don't know. I didn't know what to make of it.
Listeners, if you've read Gloria, please let us know.
Yeah, what I would love to hear theories a lot because, and you know, like with all Bentley Little books, it goes even more off the rails at the end and just has like a really wild climax. So it just happened really fast for me and I probably have to go back and reread, but
yeah, as I was taking notes for the podcast, I was rereading like certain sections and I was like, oh yeah, I remember when that happened because that's wild. Like the ending is very, very bizarre. Not the very, very ending, but the climax is definitely, it's a ride for sure.
Were you happy with the ending?
I was happy with the ending. The weird and wild climax part, I was like, I don't really understand what's happening here.
Same.
But the very last few paragraphs, I was very happy with the way it ended. And it wasn't really, nothing was really resolved, I don't think. Like, there was no happy, I guess.
It wasn't, to me, a sad ending in the way that I was expecting. I was expecting like Gloria would have to accept it was going to turn into this lesson about accepting death and moving on or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad it wasn't that, or a sad ending in the way that it's like, oh, we'll forget all about this for the chance to start over fresh. So I was kind of glad that it seemed to be kind of steering in a positive direction. Like, this is going to keep happening, but it's getting better each time, or it's getting, you know, they get closer and closer to their true timeline.
Yeah. Would you classify this as cosmic horror?
Yeah. And, you know, I'm probably not the best one to say because I don't read or watch a lot of cosmic horror.
Yeah.
So I don't know, maybe my definition of it is a bit different, but I think that would fit. And I think it would just tie into this whole, like the whole concept of the multiverse, which I think started with the fucking Marvel movies because they needed a way to write their way out of dead end storylines. That is kind of because Marvel movies are so big that it's kind of like bleeding out into these other genres. Cause we got that everything everywhere all at once. Which I haven't seen it. If we had seen it, maybe we'd be talking about like the parallels, because from what I've heard, it's that whole multiverse theme.
Well, so I actually have a definition of cosmic horror because I also am not somebody that watches or reads a lot of cosmic horror. And I was like, I feel like this fits in that kind of subgenre. So the definition that I found on the internet is cosmic horror deals with the existential dread of being insignificant in the scope of all things. In an unfathomable universe filled with vast and dangerous powers, you are nothing.
Okay. Yeah, I like that.
So I think based on that, this definitely falls into that, because especially like poor Benjamin, he's not some fifth dimensional being like Gloria and Nora. He is just
Yeah.
Unfortunately caught in the maelstrom, really. Yeah.
You know, and I'm glad that the book doesn't play into that cosmic horror too deep, and that it's like, I guess I'm saying I'm glad that it didn't take a stance of like, oh, Benjamin, at the end of the day, we're dust. We're nothing. We mean shit in this giant universe. We're trash. I don't like it when, stories do that. I don't like it when they say like, you're not worth anything in the grand scheme of thing. I don't think that's a nice thing for people to hear.
No, no. And I think, yeah, ultimately the idea that love transcends everything and will,
yeah,
you'll ultimately be reunited, however you interpret that, right? Like,
yeah, I think
that's comforting.
Yeah, I think the book was going out of its way to say, like, all this, like, we mean so much to each other that all this stuff that we didn't even realize was important is big. Like, it's not nothing.
Yeah, like all those little things, like looking at his profile while he's driving or having coffee in the morning together, like things like that. It's not nothing. It means a lot. It's your world, right?
Yeah.
I like it.
Good job, Bentley Little.
Yeah, right? Especially after I read The Haunted and I was a little let down by it. I enjoyed it, but I was a little let down.
You know, that book specifically, it was like the second Bentley Little book I read. And my memories of it were so fond that when we did that reread together, while I was rereading it, you read it for the first time, it moved way down on my list. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like, oh, this isn't anything like what I remembered of it. So for that reason, I'm kind of nervous to read The Academy again, because I have a memory of having so much fun with that book and I don't want it to get ruined.
I think you just have to accept Bentley Little for what he is. Maybe that's the...
Absolutely. And my biggest advice would be, he's going to start wearing on you a little bit if you read a lot of Bentley Little. So take big spaces between your Bentley Little reads.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that similarity in his stories, it does kind of wear on you. So I take Bentley Little in moderated doses, but he's always fun to read. Like, I'm never annoyed reading a Bentley Little book.
Would this now be your favorite Bentley Little book that you've read?
I would say maybe. I do think it might be like his best. Mm-hmm. But in terms of enjoyment, I don't know. Some of them have just been so fun. And, you know, The Influence is one I would like to mention, because I was very pleasantly surprised by that one. I kind of had this rough patch where all the books I was reading by him were letting me down a bit. The Revelation being one that I really disliked. I didn't care for the store. But when I got to The Influence, it was like just different enough from his usual thing that it didn't feel repetitive. And it really, so that might be my favorite.
Nice. I mean, Stephen King, that's a cue to drink, folks, did refer to him as horror's poet laureate. So, if you haven't read some,
He has used that quote on every single one of the books. It's in all of them. There's no other quotes.
If Stephen King said that about you, wouldn't you? That would be my blurb on everything. I would get a t-shirt made that said that.
Yeah, that's all you need. That's all he uses.
Exactly.
About The Influence.
Oh, yeah.
I think this is going to sound crazy, but if you're a fan of Midnight Mass, you'd like The Influence.
Really?
Very similar.
Okay. I'm going to check it out. Because you know I love Midnight Mass.
Yeah, me too.
Anything else about Gloria that you want to share? Wait, let's talk about the cover first of all.
Oh, yeah.
Because we didn't talk about the cover.
I kind of know the person who designed it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, Kielan Patrick Burke. Kielan Patrick Burke. He designed the cover. He designed a lot of book covers. Really cool. And he is a really talented writer himself. He wrote a book called The House on Abigail Lane, which is one of my favorite haunted house stories.
Oh, I'll have to check it out.
So yeah, the cover.
I love the cover. It is such a throwback to like 80s horror novels, like kind of the ones that you would, well, I mean, it looks like it's beat up. It's got like creases on the cover. And then I'm guessing that's supposed to be Gloria on the front.
See, I wasn't sure. And that's the thing. When I started this book, I was like, hold up. The mother's name isn't Gloria, because.
Right. I thought the mother's name was going
to
be Gloria.
I was led to believe that it would be, and it would be about like her zombie mom.
Yeah.
So I assume that was Gloria's mom on the cover. Just like maybe how she would have looked in the 80s.
Yeah.
Could be either one.
That makes sense. I just love the cover. I just think it's like, it is so delightfully retro.
Yeah, I love the throwback vibe and like the fake creases on the corners.
Yep. It's delightful. Anything else?
No, not really. Just, again, I would say like, good job.
Yeah.
Bentley Little, if you're listening, because it's just so wild and different. But I also told my friend Jessie, because she loved this book too. And after I finished reading, I was like, it's not like saying that it's so different. I'm not meaning that as an insult on his other books, because I also love those too. Right. And they're fun. And like, this just made me want to go read one of those. So yeah, I just think it's really cool that his work is continuing to improve even after all these years.
It's very emotional. It is a very heartbreaking read, but definitely well worth a read. Probably one of my favorite recent reads.
Yeah, for sure.
Body count, I don't even know how many people died, because there's a lot of death in it.
They don't always stay dead.
And they don't always stay dead, so we're just going to leave it there. But before we wrap up, what are you reading right now?
Right now, I'm slowly reading my way through Osgood Riddance by Cooper S. Beckett, because I'm illustrating it, and it's hard to do without reading it. So I've been slowly working my way through that one, and I am also listening to The Broken Girls by Simone St. James on audio.
Oh, how are you liking that?
It's fine. you know, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, I think this is going to be one of those authors. It's like really sounds a lot like other new authors.
Right.
But at the same time, it's kind of like Bentley Little. Like, you know, sometimes just a fun, mindless thriller is what you need. And it's what I need, because I don't have a lot of time to focus on books right now.
Yeah. I'm currently reading Ghostland, which is the first book in the Ghostland trilogy by Duncan Ralston.
That sounds familiar.
It's fun. It's very much like, it kind of has a 13 Ghosts vibe. Like, it reminds me of that. If it were made into a movie, it would have that kind of thing going on. But it's basically about two teenagers who go to a theme park that has real ghosts. And it's called Ghostland. And that's its marketing, you know, that's how it grabs people, because they're like, we're the first theme park to have actual ghosts. And then the ghosts escape and things go very, very wrong. God.
It's like Jurassic Park for ghosts.
It's Jurassic Park for ghosts.
You could literally.
That's exactly what it is.
As you were saying that, I was like, that sounds like Jurassic Park.
Yes. Exactly.
So, the ghosts of dinosaurs.
I love dinosaurs.
I never had a dinosaur phase as a kid. I had a space phase. I had a phase where I was obsessed with outer space. Not dinosaurs.
Outer space just scares me.
Yeah.
It's so empty, but not. Anyways.
Cosmic horror right now, Sherry.
Oh, there you go. There you go. All right. So tell us where our listeners can find you and read more of your book reviews, see your art, see what upcoming books you're illustrating.
Twitter is the place where I'm hopping the most, and that's at RyanM642. I'm pretty much that on all social media. And I have a website, RyanMills.art, super easy. And I'm really proud of myself for actually updating that when I have new art.
Yay.
Instead of just letting it sit. I occasionally use the blog feature to do some book reviews or just share some drawings. But yeah, and it's a really cool website. My friend designed it.
Well, thanks for joining us today. You can catch us on Twitter at @CatScaredy and on Instagram at @ScaredyCats the podcast. Subscribe wherever you find podcasts. Don't forget to let us know what you think by leaving us a review, and let us know what you're reading. We'd love to hear what up and coming books you've been reading, any old favorites that you've been reading, because Ryan and I are pretty voracious readers, I would say, and are always looking for new recommendations. So Until next time, stay scared.
Bye.